Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome back to our final segment here on Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. It's been a great show so far. It's a pleasure for me to welcome a second-time guest, although it's been 3 years, Jacqueline Berger. Welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me, Zara.
It's a real pleasure. Well, Jacqueline Berger is a talented author, guest speaker, and lecturer on the wives of America's presidents, the first ladies. A native of California living in a suburb of Los Angeles with her family, Jacqueline's interests and fascination with the first ladies originally began when a poised and sophisticated first lady with her same name was living in the White House. Of course, that was Jacqueline Kennedy. Since then, Jacqueline has spent over 30 years researching to bring these dynamic women from history to life while revealing the scandals and exposing the false rumors, if not lies, surrounding them. Jacqueline built a personal library of over 250 books, tapes, and videos from the country's most distinguished and leading historians on America's First Ladies, but it wasn't until she retired from 25 years in the high-risk lending sector of financial services back in 2007, at the shining age of 50, she would say, that she made the decision to follow her passion and began sharing those inspiring lives of these women. In 2008, Love, Lies, and Tears, An Intimate Look at America's First Ladies, Volume 1, which was Martha Washington through Helen Taft, was published. It put Jacqueline then on a trajectory of book signings and national speaking engagements, plus, as I said, a spot here on Circles of Change show back in 2008. And today we're going to talk about Volume 2, Ellen Wilson through, indeed, her namesake, Jacqueline Kennedy. So welcome back to the First Lady's Lady.
Thank you so much, Zara.
Well, can you imagine? It's been 3 years since you and I first spoke, right?
Honest to goodness, when you mentioned that to me the first time, I went, are you sure?
I'm sure. Do the math, ladies. Do the math. And I also get the feeling now, I know, also I did not mention the introduction, but also Jacqueline has grown children as well as grandchildren.
Yes.
So the idea of birthing is something that's, you know, clearly in your life. So you birthed your child in terms of this first book, and now you've just had your second. But do you think these two children are going to be something different for you?
You know what? I honestly think they will. Just like in real life with my real children. It's funny, when I first started to do Volume 1, I was so focused on their lives and, you know, where they were born and what school they went to and what they accomplished and who they married and all of that stuff. And one of the things that really sets my book apart from other historical books is that at the end of each biography, I tell the author or the reader what I learned from this particular First Lady.
Yes.
Because I've been studying their lives literally my whole life. And I just find them so inspiring. So by the time I got to Volume 2, which, by the way, I never thought there would be a Volume 2. I thought I was going to sit down, I was going to write this book, it was going to start with Martha Washington, it was going to end with Laura Bush, and I would have this whole thing all wrapped up in 18 months. Big surprise. So 4 years into it, I finally had Volume 1 completed, and I ended it with Helen Taft, because it was just before World War I. It seemed like an appropriate time to end the book. And then once again, I thought, well, I'll write Volume 2. Once again, it's going to end with Laura Bush. But the stories got so long and so involved. I mean, we're talking about Eleanor Roosevelt and Jacqueline Kennedy. Each of their biographies were running at least 100 pages. So once again, I decided, you know what, I'm going to make this a trilogy now. So now there's going to be 3 volumes. And when I started to write Volume 2, I started to focus in much more on what these women taught me,
yes,
as opposed to just, you know, where they went to school and who they married and things of that nature. Although their lives, all of them, are extremely fascinating and very, very inspiring.
The very fascination from the onset, were you always, you know, intrigued by history as a young child? I mean, any further reflection now that you've been so many years into writing these stories as to why these women resonate so strongly with you?
Well, it's funny that you talk about history. No, when I was a young child, no. But I will tell you, growing up, of course, everyone called me Jackie. Mm-hmm. And I tell my audiences, that I speak on college campuses and presidential universities and women's organizations, that when I was a young girl growing up, I didn't know any Jackies. I tell people there was Jackie Gleason and Jackie Cooper.
Sure, right.
Now you know that I'm not in my 30s, by the way.
That's right, as our previous guest. I got
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I loved listening to Laura. And so when Jacqueline Kennedy became First Lady, she was really the only other woman that I knew that had my name of Jacqueline. My father always called me Jacqueline. And I didn't know any other Jacquelines. So I was fascinated with her. I mean, you know, she was sophisticated and spoke
sure.
languages and had wonderful posture. And then when President Kennedy was assassinated, I think like with the rest of the world, I was totally captivated and glued to the television. I tell students that this was before CNN. This was
sure.
before 24-hour day news. And, you know, we saw Lee Harvey Oswald get shot on television mm-hmm. right before our very eyes. This was real life happening. And I learned at that young age that real life could be far more interesting than anything, that stories that people could make up.
Right.
And that's when I really started to focus in on the First Ladies. I found Jacqueline Kennedy, she seemed to hold the entire country together by herself. One of the things we tend to forget is that she had two small children. Her young son was just turning 3 mm-hmm. the same day she was burying her husband, the President of the United States. And how she got through that with the class and sophistication that she did it, I just admired it immensely. And then I started to read more about Lady Bird Johnson and Pat Nixon and then going back further into history. And I discovered that this unique sorority mm-hmm. of women mm-hmm. were extremely strong. They were very wise. They all lived under a microscope, and how they did it with such sophistication and class, that's what got my attention. And that brought me into history and reading history in the era that these women grew up in. And like I say, I just found it so much more interesting and exciting than any story that someone could make up.
Yeah. Well, you know, for all of the attributes that you found that are common with these women, talk to us, though, that how they really differ from other women that are in the spotlight. There's something much, much more profound and deeper here.
Well, I'll tell you that the big difference is that, number one, they are all celebrities, whether they intended to be
yes.
or not. You know, that's one of the big differences. You know, sometimes we look at other individuals and we say, well, they're in the spotlight because they want to be. They're possibly actors or something of this nature. These women are ordinary wives, mothers, daughters. They have children that have cancer and that were alcoholics. They had parents that passed away while they were living in the White House. And they had to go through all of this under the microscope of the public's eye. And I find that so challenging. You know, many of us live through different things in our life, but we don't necessarily share it, sometimes not even with our own best friends, let alone the entire world that's watching us, watching our every move, watching how we raise our children, for instance, the arguments that we might have with our spouse. And that is a particular challenge. And a lot of times, these women, they didn't necessarily want to be in the White House.
That's
that
right.
was not their goal. It was their spouse's goal. And what they had to sacrifice and give up, I just give them a tremendous amount of credit for it, regardless of what your political background is or, you know, what their politics might be. It's what they gave up and what they sacrificed for the country and for the rest of us. I just have to take my hat off to them. I have great, great respect and admiration for every single one of them.
The changes in their own background, though, over these multiple generations that you've studied, of course, women in this day and age, sometimes they take for the benefit of the doubt, the equal access to voting, to education, to being able to have a credit card in their name, et cetera, you know, there's a lot of societal norms that have shifted over the years for these women. Were they ever ahead of the curve? Or how would you characterize that, how their training, whatever training meant then, has changed?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, several of them were way ahead of the curve. When you go back into history and start to look at Abigail Adams, for instance, She didn't believe in slavery. Now, if you think back about our earlier presidents, you know, from George Washington all the way up to Zachary Taylor, all of those presidents, with the exception of John Adams and his son John Quincy Adams, they all owned slaves. Mm-hmm. And it was Abigail Adams who said, we're not giving the black man what we're fighting for ourselves, which is independence, which was way, way ahead of her time. I mean, can you imagine?
Oh, exactly.
I mean, saying to her husband, don't forget the ladies when you start writing this Constitution that you're talking about.
Exactly.
So that is someone that was way ahead of her time. And then you can kind of contrast that with someone like Edith Wilson, for instance, who was Woodrow Wilson's second wife. She was living in the White House when the suffragettes were literally picketing out front, wanting the right to vote, and she didn't believe in it.
So there's the flip side. Yeah.
Exactly. There is the flip side of it, which once again shows us that these are just ordinary women that, just because they live in the White House, their philosophies may or may not be much different than our own, for instance. They could be well ahead of their time or way behind their time. It just depends on the individual. And some of them didn't get the credit that they so deserve. Mm-hmm. Mary Todd Lincoln, for instance, you know, she was known for being a shopaholic, which unfortunately she was. And during the Civil War, I mean, that wasn't the best thing to do necessarily when the president was constantly looking for extra funds to send to his soldiers and his wife was spending money on, you know, buying gloves and clothing. Mm-hmm. But when you start to understand her background and really read her history, that she came from a very, very wealthy family, that she was brought up with very fine things, that she lost a son before she moved into the White House. She lost a son while she was living in the White House and didn't receive any sympathy at all from the public, unlike Jackie Kennedy, who, when she lost a young child, she, you know, the country rallied around her, or Grace Coolidge when she lost her 16-year-old son when she was living in the White House. Once again, the country rallied around her and gave her support. Nobody was giving Mary Todd Lincoln any support because they were losing brothers and fathers and sons every single day during the Civil War. And then to see her husband assassinated right before her very eyes, I mean, literally. She lost another child after she left the White House. So when you start to hear the tragedies and understand more about these individuals' personalities, I think you can have a little bit more appreciation for them and not just read the headlines, so to speak.
Where was it in the process of your doing all this deep research, Jacqueline, that you realized the responsibility on your shoulders to really recast how some of the history books or even the popular cultural literature of either their time or now current times have not spoken truth?
Oh, that's an excellent question. And I think it started for me even before I started writing the books. Mm-hmm. I have been speaking about these women. That's what I refer to as my day job. I'm a national guest speaker, and I'm invited to various organizations and tell these women's stories. And that's when I really said, I need to tell the truth behind these women.
Set the record straight.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of fun stories, and people want to hear about the gossip. You know, they want to know about Frances Cleveland. She was only 21 years of age when she married Grover Cleveland, who was 49. I tease audiences and say, my mother would have never approved of that. But once again, to learn more about their life stories and how did that come about? You know, how did Grover Cleveland meet this young girl and, you know, this romance develop? And the stories themselves are absolutely fascinating. So it was back, like I say, even before I started writing the book, that I wanted to share those things. I wanted to tell people that Mamie Eisenhower was not an alcoholic. In fact, when her husband was, you know, fighting World War II, she would not even go out and to dinner with a girlfriend because she was concerned that if she had was even drinking a club soda, for instance, somebody would say she was out drinking wine and partying while her husband was sending, you know, young men off to war and young women, you know, to be killed. So I wanted to share those stories long before I started to write about them. And then it just became, even more imperative as I started to write about the stories to set the record straight, so to speak.
You bet. Now, you've mentioned a couple of times here on the radio the interaction and the learning that you've gotten, I'm sure, by being out and about and talking about these stories. What have been some of your biggest ahas based on the reactions you've gotten from your audiences? And maybe talk to us in terms of the college campus venue versus the historical, already knowledgeable groups you address.
Well, that's an interesting question. I can tell you I'm amazed when I go on college campuses and I talk about Nancy Reagan, for instance, and you would think I was talking about Martha Washington. And I kind of chuckle to myself and I say, come on, you guys.
That's right.
You know, this is the 1980s. I'm not going back to the 1700s. So I find that on college campuses, unless they're really current first ladies, you know, if it hasn't been within the last maybe 10 years, they really don't know about them.
Yeah.
They don't know that, you know, Bess Truman was involved with, you know, so much the inside scoop in the White House, you know, before her husband literally was dropping atomic bombs on, you know, other countries. Or the things and the accomplishments that Eleanor Roosevelt accomplished and what her life meant. And then when I start talking with some senior citizens, for instance, they don't necessarily know that when Helen Taft went into the White House and it was her major goal to live in the White House, she was able to visit it when she was 16. Her father and Rutherford B. Hayes were legal attorneys together. Mm-hmm. They were business partners. So she was in the White House as a young girl, and she made up her mind she wanted to live there. That just 2 months after becoming First Lady, she had a massive stroke and lost her ability to speak. And how devastating that was, that she wanted to live in this house and accomplish all of these things, and then she found herself unable to speak and doing the things that she wanted to do. And most people don't know about that. They don't know that Ida McKinley was an epileptic, for instance, and that she had epileptic attacks, and that this White House staff knew about them, although the country didn't, because that wasn't spoken of back in those
days.
And, you know, they didn't know, for instance, that several of our first ladies were divorced before they met their future, you know, presidential spouse, and how their lives were different. Some of them had been married and were widowed before. They were wives and mothers, once again, before they met their future presidential spouse. And lots of individuals don't know that, don't know those stories. And they're taken back by it. They're very surprised, actually, to discover that.
Well, you really were going by the name, the brand, we'll say, the First Lady's Lady.
Yeah.
You've been on the speaker circuit before you ever did your books.
Mm-hmm.
How is now, having had the first book for the last 3 years, and now you see the first book, you know, expanding your field of view or making you more determined? I mean, what do you think is coming next for you?
Well, that's a very interesting question. It's funny, in the very beginning, I really didn't think I could write the book. I am a speaker, and it's far easier for me to share their stories than it is to sit down and write them. But I have gained the confidence, and I have proven to myself now that, yes, I can, in fact, do that. I've gotten so busy with my speaking engagements that I've literally had to put off Volume 3, which is going to pick up with Lady Bird Johnson and go up to Laura Bush. I've literally had to put it off for the last 6 months now, and I'm really questioning, do I really want to go back into my, what I refer to as my writing cave?
Cave the cave, yes.
Literally. I mean, I learned to say no to people because I had to finish writing the various chapters and how time-consuming it was. And I'm trying to say, do I really want to do that? This year I'm going to be turning 60, and I'm trying to look at what is this decade going to mean for me as a wife and as a grandmother, and how do I want to spend my time, and do I want to do that behind closed doors writing these other stories? And I don't have the answer to that yet, to be perfectly honest with you.
But at the same standpoint, you know, that we're young in our approaching 60s still. There's no question, Jacqueline, that with life expectancy, energy expectancy, everything wrapped around you, that for you to have yet another child, meaning your third book, whether it be to take a break now, maybe collect your thoughts or let it come to you, that I can't imagine you're going to go off to the big nap, as I say, without having done book three. It's a matter of when, maybe how, and even the mechanisms by which you'll do it.
That's very true. And one of the things that I did learn during this journey is that you don't go from point A to point B.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of branches in between. And although I may not finish volume three, let's say by the end of 2012, but that doesn't mean that it won't be finished if I choose to do it by 13 or 2014 or whenever mm-hmm. that may be. And that is okay. You know, that's something else. I've learned that you can't fail if you don't quit. And as long as I don't stop doing this, as long as I don't stop doing the research, I don't stop doing the talks, then I haven't failed at it.
Well, and I think the other thing I hear from you is you're as every bit excited and engaged with your topic as you were when you started it as a child.
Every bit. And the more that I've learned about these women over the years and studied about them, I've become even more fascinated and more excited about it, which is what makes it really so much fun. You know, I was in corporate America for 25 years, and I was a vice president of a national corporation. And for a young woman, when affirmative action was so important, you know, that was a major goal of mine. I mean, to have a business card that had vice president on it. And I'm starting to look back now, and I'm saying, that no longer holds the passion for me that these women's lives and their stories and their life lessons have always been for me. And it's grown as I've gotten older, as opposed to minimized over time.
You bet. I think the other part of it is we encounter people, we read about them, we meet them, where you see that their passion becomes their profession.
Absolutely.
And you think, how lucky are they? And by the way, how can I go find that for me? And I would imagine your advice is, well, go look at where you've already spent your time or you've been invested in. It might be right there.
Absolutely. Look at your hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be embarrassed because when my friends and I would get together and they would all be talking about the bestseller and I would sit very quietly because the books that I was reading were not necessarily the bestsellers, but they were the history books and the biographies, and I was studying people's lives. And I was, like I say, a little bit embarrassed about it. I didn't want to share the latest book that I was reading because I didn't think anyone else would have interest in it. Well, when you start to look at what interests you and what you enjoy, whether it be reading or doing, follow that. You don't realize it's a passion. Sometimes you just think of it just as a hobby, or, oh, I just enjoy reading, you know, comics, for instance. Well, maybe you have a great talent in that particular area, and people don't look at that seriously until you start to pursue it.
Very well. Well, Jacqueline, I loved your comment about that you can't fail if you don't quit.
Absolutely.
And so I take with great pleasure that we've had the chance to have you hosted here twice on our show. Again, this has been Jacqueline Berger, who's the First Lady's Lady, and her two books, Love, Lies, and Tears, An Intimate Look at America's First Ladies. And do visit her site, www.firstladieslady.com. And know that she's also would love to come and entertain your groups or other venues and connect with you. Thanks so much for being here on Circles of Change. And we're going to keep track of you now as you go into the next shining phase of whatever it's going to become, Jacqueline.
Sara, thank you so very much.
My pleasure. Very good.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.